Welcome to the Earth First Update, bringing you all the environmental news you can use for over 20 years. I'm Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, and we're also at www.freakradio.org on Thursday, the 1st of June. I want to ask you to please have a pencil and paper handy so you can take down names, addresses, emails, web pages, phone numbers, all the information you need to take action for the environment. Let's start off with announcements. The Environmental Protection Center's and volunteer base camp is coming up in a week. EPIC's network of volunteer ground truthers help monitor logging projects and other destructive activities in the Klamath National Forest and surrounding public lands. The information gained from ground truthing allows EPIC to provide public with information needed to understand and engage in decisions affecting public forest lands, waters, wildlife, and communities. Information from on-the-ground monitoring also helps EPIC challenge bad logging projects, destructive grazing, and other Forest Service actions that degrade the environment at the expense of taxpayers. Space is limited. You will have to reserve your spot as soon as possible. Please go to the website wildcalifornia.org to register. The base camp will be located off of Highway 96 in the Syed Valley of the Klamath National Forest. The exact location will be announced when you register. There is carpooling. Go to their carpool page and get in touch. You will need camping equipment. And don't forget the sunscreen. Once again, that's the EPIC Base Camp, June 9th through June 11th. And once again, go to wildcalifornia.org. And here's the Buffalo Field Campaign's news for this week. There was a banner sending a message to Yellowstone National Park. Early Tuesday morning, Buffalo Field Campaign patrols came across an enormous banner strung over the west entrance to Yellowstone National Park. The message was delivered to visitors coming into the park. While it didn't hang for very long, some park visitors saw it and are talking about it. Buffalo Field Campaign was able to get some photos, and the message is getting out there. Well done, and thank you to whoever you are. Hopefully Superintendent Wink's phone number is ringing off the hook. It's a good idea to keep pressure on Montana, too, so please, after calling Superintendent Wink's number, that is 307-345-2002, you can call Steve Bullock, the Montana governor, at 406-444-3111. Be relentless until the slaughter stops. And the Buffalo Field Campaign is seeking volunteers for their summer outreach program. Volunteers get to spend 5 days a week camping in beautiful Yellowstone National Park. You'll spend your days enjoying all that landscape has to offer while relaxing in the boiling river to watch a mama black bear with her cubs. You'll have the amazing opportunity of seeing wild buffalo during the rut while helping to do outreach on their behalf. Educating park visitors on the plight of America's last wild bison is one of the most important parts of what we do here at the Buffalo Field Campaign. While tabling, you'll meet and bring the buffalo's story to people from all around the world. During the 5 days in the park, volunteers will share a tent at various campgrounds in and around Yellowstone. When not tabling, adventuring in the park is one of the many benefits of summers in Yellowstone, with plenty of places to hike, swim, and enjoy nature. Volunteers will have 2 days a week at Buffalo Field Campaign headquarters near West Yellowstone. Go to their web page at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org to read all about the Buffalo Field Campaign and how to volunteer. If you have any questions, give them a call at 406-646-0070. And in Denmark, the famous Little Mermaid has been doused in red paint by wailing protesters in this story written by Julie Astrid Thompson of Reuters. Denmark's most famous landmark, the Little Mermaid, has been doused in red paint by anti-whaling activists. "Denmark Defend the Whales of the Faroe Islands" was written in English on the ground in front of the sculpture using the Danish spelling for the country. Whaling close to shore is permitted in the islands, which lie between the mainland and Iceland and are a self-governing part of Denmark. Danish police told Reuters they were investigating the incident as vandalism, but did not know the identity of those responsible yet. The statue, which depicts the Little Mermaid from the Danish author Hans Christian Andersen's tale of the same name, has been damaged several times, including being decapitated twice. And Oregon House of Representatives has passed a suction dredge mining reform bill. In this story from Cascadia Wildlands, the Oregon House passed legislation yesterday in a show of bipartisan support to protect sensitive salmon and lamprey habitat from suction dredge mining. The Suction Dredge Reform Bill, SB3A, takes a measured approach to protecting the most sensitive rivers and streams from impacts of suction dredge mining, while still allowing suction dredges in areas where they do less harm. Suction dredge mining is a form of recreational gold mining that uses a motorized floating dredge to suck up the riverbed. Multiple scientific studies show that suction dredge mining can trap and kill young fish and fish eggs, releasing fine sediments that smother spawning gravel for salmon and even stir up legacy mercury from historic mining operations. The suction dredge reform bill is a result of a long and collaborative process championed by the late Senator Alan Bates from Southern Oregon. It represents a compromise informed by input from anglers, conservation groups, local businesses, the mining industry, and others. The passage of Senate Bill 3 represents a triumph of local communities and the success of an incremental collaborative approach begun years ago with the passage of Senate Bill 838, said Nick Cady, legal director of Cascadia Wildlands. Its passage proves that if the state takes initiative and leadership on conservation issues, Oregonians will arrive at bipartisan solutions that benefit our businesses and environment. Clean rivers that support healthy fish and vibrant recreation are critical to state and local economies. In 2008, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife found that people spent $2.5 billion, with a B, on fish and wildlife recreation in the state of Oregon. The commercial fishing industry also relies heavily on healthy rivers and salmon. Under the Suction Dredge Reform Bill, suction dredge mining is prohibited in spawning and rearing habitat for sensitive, threatened, or endangered salmonids and lamprey, termed essential salmonid habitat. Outside of these areas, suction dredge mining would be allowed under a Department of Environmental Quality permit that places certain limits on where and how suction dredges can be operated in streams. This bill establishes a permanent regulatory framework to manage suction dredge mining. In 2013, the legislature first recognized the need to better protect sensitive species when it passed a bill to study the issue and implement a temporary moratorium on salmon and bull trout habitat. Right now, the temporary protections for the most sensitive streams end in 2021, said Stacy Detweiler of the Rogue Riverkeeper. Yesterday's vote is critical for the health of Oregon's rivers and the communities that rely upon them. The vote was an important step forward, building on bipartisan support demonstrated in the Senate. And stranded whales are helped back to sea in this story from Reuters. 20 whales, which were stranded offshore at the eastern Sri Lankan town of Sampur, have made it back to sea with the help of the Navy and local residents, the Navy said on Thursday. Officials said they do not know why the whales had ended up on the beach near Trincomalee on Wednesday. They were eventually helped back into the sea at high tide. It may be due to the change of the sea current or increase of the sea surface temperature, Navy spokesperson Chaminda Walakuluj told Reuters. The sea off Sri Lanka has been rough since last week because of a storm which later developed into Cyclone Mora. At least 206 people were killed and another 92 are still missing. And from Epic, we read that there are three reasons to buck the Horse Creek project in this story by Tom Wheeler. First, logging makes conditions worse. The Forest Service claims that the project is necessary to reduce fuel loads and ensure a new forest will return. Logging will actually hinder both of these goals in the short term. Logging will increase fuels on the forest floor and harm the natural regeneration of the forest. Loggers generally only take out the merchantable timber from the logging area. The rest, limbs, tops, and other wood not good enough for a sawmill, will be left on the ground, creating a sudden accumulation of wood. Without logging, these dead trees will fall at a sporadic rate, with the smaller diameter trees falling first and larger diameter trees holding on much longer. The area is naturally regenerating. In May, EPIC staff visited numerous logging sites and discovered that the forest is already being reborn. Even in areas that burned at high severity, life is abundant. Hardwood trees are sprouting from stumps, and the forest floor is full of little conifer seedlings. Given time, another forest will regrow here. Logging, however, puts this regeneration at risk. Heavy machinery and crews of loggers will compact and chew up the forest floor, killing the regrowth. 2. Taxpayers subsidize private logging companies. It is likely that the Horse Creek project will require taxpayer dollars to subsidize private logging. Even if you don't give a hoot about the logging project's impacts to owls, this corporate cronyism should upset you. Frequently, post-fire timber sales like Horse Creek cost more to plan than they make back in timber revenue. The economic value of the standing dead trees as timber is low. After a fire, timber value diminishes dramatically. In a recent salvage sale, the Klamath National Forest spent over $3 million on planning, but recovered only $336,000 from timber revenue. Not only does it cost more to produce a project than the government will make back, but taxpayers are asked to clean up after the logging. As discussed above, logging will create large amounts of fuels in the near term. Instead of requiring the timber industry to clean up after themselves, taxpayers will ultimately be responsible for cleaning up this mess under the guise of site preparation. Further, because logging requires new roads and road upgrades, taxpayers will have to have backcountry roads retrofitted to accommodate and clean up the impacts of heavy logging equipment on public roadways. In effect, taxpayers are not only paying to produce a project that will benefit the timber industry, but will also get the bill to clean up their mess. And 3, logging will remove habitat for forest critters. In both the short and long term, post-fire logging destroys habitat for our wild friends like the northern spotted owl and Pacific fisher. Owls and fishers are adapted to a fire-heavy regime and will use post-fire forests for hunting. The large pulse of dead wood, together with the growth of herbs and shrubs, provides habitat for some prey like wood rats. The standing dead trees provide the necessary structure and some element of protection. Owls will perch on the limbs of dead trees, and fisher will rest in the dead trees and downed logs. Post-fire logging removes the largest trees, those that provide the structure necessary for critters like the owl and the fisher. When those trees are cut, the area can no longer function as habitat in the short term. The largest dead trees are also those that are likely to continue standing until a new forest grows up. In the long term, logging and subsequent tree planting will simplify regrowing forests into even-aged monocrop tree farms, making them even less valuable as future habitat. And if you want more information, go to wildcalifornia.org. And big fish are in big trouble in Europe. A new study by an international team of scientists published in Nature, Ecology, and Evolution warns that many large fish species, including many of the sharks and rays of Europe, are threatened with extinction. Confirming the findings of previous studies, the scientists highlight regional differences in fish stock status in Europe and point to overfishing in the Mediterranean. Marine fish play an important role in marine ecosystems, but are also a major food source for marine animals and humans. The new study published in Nature, Ecology, and Evolution found that the bigger the fish, the more likely it is to be threatened with extinction. This is because they are more susceptible to threats such as overfishing because they grow more slowly, take longer to mature, have fewer offspring, and are in higher demand for food consumption and recreational fishing. The research team studied the status of commercial fish stocks all around Europe to assess the extinction risk of fish. The JRC contributed to the study by analyzing stock assessment data of commercial fish stocks in the Mediterranean. The Mediterranean stock assessment data were produced by the Scientific Technical Economic Committee for Fisheries, a commission expert group for which the JRC acts as a secretariat and provides expertise in stock assessments. Scientists found significant geographical discrepancies. A much higher fraction of the fish stocks were overexploited and depleted in biomass in the Mediterranean compared with the Northeast Atlantic. None of the 39 assessed Mediterranean fish stocks examined were classified as sustainable. Hake is of particular concern. Of the 12 examined hake stocks in the Mediterranean, 6 have exploitation rates that are over 5 times higher than the rate in line with maximum sustainable yield. Scientists say this is linked to how the areas are managed, how fishing quotas are set, and how fish stocks are monitored. They also remind that the Mediterranean is a semi-enclosed sea with a much longer history of human impact compared with the Atlantic. At present, the Mediterranean is heavily impacted, in addition to fishing, by multiple stress factors ranging from temperature increase and acidification to habitat modification and pollution in the coastal areas. The study stresses that while most of Europe's commercial fish stocks are not yet threatened with extinction, most of the larger fish species are, including sharks and rays. In addition to these, the large fish species that are threatened include 6 species of sturgeon, the northern wolffish, blue ling, dusky grouper, the Atlantic halibut, and Atlantic salmon. The study highlights 2 major issues for Europe's fish: the threats to large fish species, including sharks and rays, and the severe overfishing of the Mediterranean, which is in contrast to the improving picture of the Northeast Atlantic. In the Northeast Atlantic, there are catch limits in place coupled with rigorous fisheries monitoring and enforcement schemes. In the Mediterranean, there is a larger number of fishing vessels using multiple gear. There are largely no catch limits, and the management is carried out mainly through some spatial and temporal restrictions to fishing, which are often poorly enforced. And Sea Shepherd has recorded never-before-seen footage of a rare Cuvier's beaked whale during their expedition to Mexico. Sea Shepherd's research vessel, the RV Martin Sheen, returned to Mexico's Guadalupe Island to continue its study of Cuvier's beaked whales, capturing never-before-seen drone footage of these rare and elusive cetaceans. During the 2-week expedition, Mexican lead scientist Gustavo Cardenas and the American collaborator Jenny Trickey employed various acoustic devices to compare their effectiveness. The scientists will return and leave these devices for a longer period of time. The acoustic instruments record the whale's echolocation clicks, helping scientists estimate the distribution and abundance of Cuvier's beaked whales at the island. Some of these instruments are also the same ones used by Cardenas in the northern Gulf of California to estimate the population trends of the near-extinct vaquita porpoise. Guadalupe Island is a Mexican reserve famous for its large concentrations of great white sharks between the months of August and December. However, according to Cardenas, what most people don't know is that in addition to large numbers of sharks, we can also find the rarely seen Cuvier's beaked whales here. Cuvier's beaked whales are considered the most extreme mammal divers in the world, with the ability to dive down to almost 10,000 feet or 3,000 meters, roughly the length of 8 Empire State Buildings. They can stay underwater for up to 2 hours and only need a few minutes of surface oxygen before going back down. Their exceptional diving ability makes them hard to study, in contrast to most whales, which surface every 20 minutes or so. On May 20th, the RV Martin Steen, captain and drone pilot French Martin, recorded the first ever seen drone images of Cuvier's beaked whale. "I've been recording many cetaceans for our 2017 research projects in Mexico," said Captain Martin. "We recorded migrating blue whales and many fin whales in the Gulf of California, but these beaked whales are a lot more difficult to capture because they take a very long time after each dive to surface and only stay up for a few minutes. I had the drone ready at all times. It was launched as soon as a whale was sighted. It took a few attempts, but Captain Martin was able to capture a mother and calf, and later 3 more individuals of the species. Scientists on board the Sheen were thrilled with the achievement. The drone footage gives you a new view of these animals' lives, so we can see things we didn't know before, like how they are turning their heads a lot and looking at each other, said marine conservation scientist Dr. Barbara Taylor. The expedition marked Sea Shepherd's return to the Guadalupe Island with scientists. The sailing boat was there last year with a group led by Cardenas, including Trickey of the Scripps Institute of Oceanography. During October of 2016, the expedition reported the highest sighting rates of Cuvier's beaked whales ever recorded. I have studied Cuvier's in many places, but this is the highest density that I've ever seen, commented expert in cetacean abundance and estimation Dr. Jay Barlow, who assisted with the trials of the acoustic devices. Sightings of a mother and her calf also show scientists that Guadalupe could be a breeding ground for these whales. The discovery of such a large number of Cuvier's beaked whales around the island both last October and now in May suggests to scientists that this could be a resident population, an idea that is supported by several matches in the photo identification catalog of the species for this island. This is the first effort to research Cuvier's in Guadalupe Island during the month of May, said Cardenas. We had 24 sightings on this trip, along with two pairs of mothers with very young calves, one of them born since we photographed the mother last October. The expedition has been a success. We were able to record individuals with our acoustic devices, and the next step is to come back and leave them in the water for longer periods. We are excited about the possibilities of what there is still to discover. And you can find more information at their website, www.seashepherd.org. And from the Earth First Newswire, we read that scientists are accidentally helping poachers to find rare species in this story by Kesavan Unakrishnan from Digital Journal, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Scientists have sent out a warning about the publishing the location and habitat of endangered species in scientific journals. Wildlife poachers are trawling online publications to target rare and exotic species as soon as the animals are described online. In a report published in Science magazine, biologists David Lindenmeyer and Benjamin Scheele of the Australia National University urged scientists across the world not to share detailed information about where the species is found in their research reports. According to their study, more than 20 newly described species and their habitats had been targeted by poachers through open access location data. The most striking example, the researchers quote, is the illegal trade in Chinese cave geckos that began so soon after they were first scientifically described in the early 2000s, with the species being pushed to extinction in the wild in a decade. The report says, biologists must urgently unlearn parts of their century-old publishing culture and rethink the benefits of publishing location data and habitat descriptions for rare and endangered species to avoid unwittingly contributing to further species declines. Restricting information entails some costs, but these must be weighed against the increasing harm of unrestricted information accessibility. Scientists are worried that poachers are accessing online reports and publications at the click of a button. In the past, such information could only be accessed through hard copies and library basements. Already there are signs researchers are beginning to recognize this problem and adapting to it. In some of the recent research reports detailing new species, animals are described without location data or habitat descriptions. And EPIC gets results, spotted owl self-defense update. The 2017 spring spotted owl nesting season is now well underway. Our very wet and cold winter and early spring here on the north coast of California makes this spotted owl nesting season a difficult one. EPIC has been advocating for protection and recovery of the spotted owl for the entirety of our 40-year history, and 2017 is no different. Here are some highlights of the work we've done and are doing and will do in 2017 to protect and restore the spotted owl to their rightful place in the forests of Northern California. California state listing has been accomplished after a four-year melodrama marked by delays and failures to meet statutory deadlines. The California Fish and Game Commission finally voted to list the spotted owl as a threatened species under the California Endangered Species Act. The commission has failed to adopt findings to ratify this decision, however. Epic will be in front of the Fish and Game Commission on June 20th and 21st at its meeting at the Smith River on the Del Norte County to once again advocate on behalf of the spotted owl. And spotted owls benefit from forest fire mosaic. In this story from the American Ornithological Society Publication Office, fire is a crucial part of the forest ecosystem on which threatened spotted owls rely, but climate change and decades of fire suppression are changing the dynamics of these forests. A new study from the Condor Ornithological Applications examines California spotted owl habitat use in Yosemite National Park and shows that while owls avoid the badly burned areas left behind by massive stand replacement fires, they benefit from habitat that includes a mosaic of burned patches of different sizes and degrees of severity. The National Park Service's Stephanie Ives, formerly of Humboldt State University, and her colleagues wanted to know how spotted owl foraging patterns are influenced by fire severity and fire-created edges, with the goal of informing future fuels reduction efforts and prescribed burning programs. They used radio transmitters to track the movements of 13 owls on 8 territories in Yosemite National Park between 2010 and 2012, and found that overall, owls forage near their roosts and along the edges of burned patches of the forest, preferring these edge habitats. Owls selected larger burned patches than the average available size, but avoided the interiors of severely burned patches. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org. You can listen to a rebroadcast tomorrow afternoon during our Environment Friday programming at 3 p.m. You could also tune into WMNB 107.1 in North Adams, Massachusetts, Fridays at 5:30, KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow, Idaho, Wednesdays at 3 p.m., KOWA 106.5 in Olympia, Washington, Saturdays at 7 a.m., and WLSL 92.7 in Dade City, Florida, Sundays at noon, KHCF 89.9, KGIG 104.9, KPHD 93.3, in Morgan Hill in Modesto, California, as well as Berkeley Liberation Radio at 104.1 FM in Berkeley, all rebroadcast the Earth First Update. Please check their schedules for days and times. You could always go to radioforall.net, where you can listen online or download this or previous Earth First Updates, radio4all.net. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download and broadcast. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and produced at Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Uncle Dennis, and I want to thank you for listening to the Earth First Update. And please tune in next week.